The third case set for argument this morning is Michelle Jensen et al. Versus Department of South Dakota Department of Corrections. It's appeal number 30890. A.J. Swanson is appearing, will argue on behalf of the appellant, Jensen et al. And Grant Flynn will be arguing on behalf of the State of South Dakota Department of Corrections. Paul Sweetland is also present at council table. With that, each side will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Swanson, you'll have a 5-minute rebuttal. You can proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. This case is really, in my judgment, chapter 2 of number 12091, which is the Lincoln County versus Johnson case handed down in 1977. I'd like to start with just briefly summarizing the contrasts and similarities between these two cases, then and now. Both involve government, construction, and land use projects in Lincoln County. It was a landfill then in Delapre Township, which is on the north border of Lincoln County, very near to Sioux Falls. And now it's a prison in Dayton Township, which happens to be my home township where my law office is located. So I am very privileged to appear here today to represent my neighbors in Dayton and also La Valle and other adjoining townships, all of whose land is zoned A1 agricultural district in Lincoln County. Continuing with my analysis of then and now, the city of Sioux Falls was the project proponent then, and now it's a state. Then it was Lincoln County officials who brought the action and appealed to this court. And at least here, Lincoln County is not officially present, although they did file an amicus brief. I assume the case was brought then under the provisions of SDCL 11234, seeking injunctive relief against the city, although the case, the opinion doesn't really say that, but I think we can assume that was the basis of the court's jurisdiction. Then the Attorney General carried the role of amicus, filing an extensive brief, which I have made part of my appendices to my opening brief. And today it's the Attorney General defending the state in this action. Back then, the Attorney General urged strongly this court to adopt the balancing of interest test, but now the Attorney General argues there is no right to be heard by the neighbors to the state's project because the state is exempt. Back then, the Attorney General argued against the city's claim of exemption. Back then, the city argued that the general rule, which was based on eminent domain powers, should exempt it from the embrace of Lincoln County zoning power. And now the Attorney General seeks to affirm the trial court's adoption of the general rule, but one that is based on possession of the eminent domain powers.
What if the difference between the two cases is that the city, in the Lincoln County case, that's in our decisions, isn't the same thing as the state now, in a hierarchical way of thinking about sovereigns and units of government that are created by the sovereign.
Yes, well, the city had zoning power.
Through the state.
And through the state, as did the county, and they also participated jointly in zoning back then. That joint zoning was disrupted by the fact of the case for the landfill project. In this case, the state does not directly exercise any zoning power. Now, I understand the legislature has the right to direct the carrying out of the zoning power and frequently does direct, redirect, amend, and so forth on that power, both to the cities and to the county. But the state itself exercises no zoning power through its agencies or through its agents. As far as the county is concerned, it's just another governmental entity that does not determine zoning issues and is wanting to establish a land use in an area that is comprehensively planned and zoned.
Is there another critical difference between the Lincoln County case of old and the one of new, that the enforcement authority is vastly different? Whereas previously the enforcement authority was a public entity, that's not true in this case. And although you mentioned that the Lincoln County, through the state's attorney, appeared, I don't know if they ever were authorized to, but they made a motion to appear as an amicus filer and filed a brief, they're not the enforcement authority.
No, and I recognize the clerk has sent me a letter wanting me to focus on that issue.
Well, it's sent to both parties.
Pardon?
It was sent to both parties.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, not necessarily a focus, but one should be prepared to address the issue.
Right. So well, I will try to address that now, and I'll come back to my list of then and now comparisons if I can.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe a launch point might be 11.2.25, for instance, which is the section of Chapter 11.2 that vests county commissions with the enforcement authority.
It does, and it indicates in Section 34 that it's the board who is to pursue injunctive relief against those who are violating the ordinance. In this case, we have the curious thing. As pled in my pleading, paragraph F4 of the complaint, we didn't know about this prison until October the 6th of 2023 when it was unveiled on us. However, the state agency, someone acting on behalf of the state, had already met with the county and certain members of the county board to let them know what was going to happen. That was all kept very secret from us. By the time we got knowledge of this, that relationship had already turned the county board to a neutral party and actually one who was not willing to take action for injunctive relief. We would watch news articles on local news almost daily where one or another member of the county board would get up before the cameras and talk about what a wonderful economic opportunity this prison was going to be. No talk about it makes, you know, that it's not in compliance with the zoning ordinance. That was not the focus. We very quickly recognized, excuse me, we very quickly recognized that if there was to be anything done to challenge the state, we were going to have to do it.
Why do you say that?
County would not take action.
Do you think they had a ministerial duty to take action?
I think if it's a violation of the zoning ordinance, yes, I think they do have a duty.
Because 11.235 gives any taxpayer the authority to seek an injunction that would compel the county to enforce
its own. True, but what and I'm sorry to cut
you off, okay,
but what would we find at the end of that relief? We would find cases such as Willoughby against Grimm and Jensen versus Lincoln County Board. That's a 2006 decision, where this court said mandamus is appropriate only when the duty to act is unequivocal. What would the state have said when we brought mandamus against the planning board or the county board, that they had to take action? We even included the state as a party. They would trot out the very same arguments that the circuit court here found so utterly persuasive, and that is, we're exempt. There's no duty for anyone to comply with the county ordinance when you're the state.
Perhaps you're right. Sort of a futility argument, I guess. But can you identify a statutory source of law that allows your clients a private right of action to enforce public zoning restrictions against anybody, and here including the state?
No, I'm not aware of a prior case in South Dakota that would have involved a comparable set of circumstances, because I have found that, generally speaking, county boards are pretty vigilant about enforcing their comp plans and zoning ordinances. And I think in this case, Lincoln County was the clear exception. They had notice and knowledge of this case, and what did they end up doing? They ended up submitting an amicus brief which said, please decide the issue of whether balancing of interest tests are applied to the state for matters within our jurisdiction. I mean, I'm very glad they submitted the amicus.
Yeah, it seems somewhat supportive of your position.
And they are. They didn't resubmit it here. They didn't ask to be present or to make arguments in support of their position. I think we were basically cut loose and put on our own. And so if we were going to have any, as we watched the developments that were happening at this farm, at the gravel road intersections of 278th and 477th Avenue, the longer we delayed, the more certain it was that the state would be given its lead and would be allowed to go ahead and complete the project. And so within less than 30 days, we decided to take action. And so we took action under what seemed to be an applicable statute within the declaratory relief collection of statutes.
Do you believe that the Declaratory Judgment Act, which is a uniform act enacted by our legislature, do you believe that it confers any substantive rights itself?
Well, that's going to be my position, that it does, because when you've got a collection of landowners, look, the state has had this property for 35 years. They obtained it by a cheat. They've been content to have it leased and farmed by a neighboring farmer for 35 years, and then suddenly, one day, they decide it's a perfect location for a prison. All the parties that have taken action and have changed their position and have made investments in their neighboring land within the very same zoning district must surely have some right to take a neighboring landowner who has decided all of a sudden that zoning is not for them and they are privileged to be a scofflaw as to the zoning ordinance. I think those neighbors must surely have a right to challenge that position when the county itself is unwilling to do so.
So before your time runs out, Mr. Swanson, can you talk a little bit about the merits? And specifically, we've got a governmental subdivision, the county, that has ordinances that says here's what our zoning is. What's their legal basis, whether it's, you know, the state has sovereign immunity, preemption? What's the basis for the county to be able to apply those ordinances, those local ordinances, against the state sovereign, which the county is a governmental subdivision of?
Well, I think if you look at the entirety of our zoning or our zoning statutes in 11-2. I think this court said it best in footnote 4 of the Lincoln County against Johnson case, and I don't have that quote right in front of me, but I think I'm able to paraphrase it. When the court said, a review of chapter 11-2, and it also included 11-4 and 11-6 in that note, does not disclose any exemptions to the applicability of zoning regulations. When Attorney General Janklow wrote his opinion in 77-13, just a few months before that, he looked at the statutes and said this is a matter of first impression. The statutes contain no obvious exemptions that would apply for the benefit of the state. So I would start with that, I guess, as the major thrust or premise that the zoning ordinances and the zoning statutes which authorize those ordinances are pretty clear in their face. And I think if you look at the cases that have decided to extend a general rule exemption, whether that's based on governmental immunity or sovereign immunity, or whether it's based on the power of eminent domain, it's all because there was at some point a statute which raised a question about whether the state should be included. In our case, in South Dakota, I think it's pretty clear. There are no exemptions. Not aware of one.
Any other questions?
I have one. The recent events in the legislature and the executive order.
Yes.
That's been raised now by the state. They contend, in response, they contend in essence that it has no bearing whatsoever on this case. Do you want to respond to that?
Sure. The reason I decided that these legislative events from the current session were of such importance is the fact that going into this case, first the Secretary of Corrections, the Department of Corrections, in her letter to me, which is Exhibit F3, I believe it is, to my complaint, when I questioned her about the basis of her claim for authority, quickly cited three elements. First was the Janklow opinion, then their authority under Chapter 1-15, and I forget the other, the actual subsection, their authority to maintain penitentiaries and prisons and so forth. But the third one was the fact that HB 1017 was adopted in the legislative session 2023, setting aside monetary sums and so forth, and telling the secretary that she may acquire properties. And claiming that as the ultimate source of discretion to do as she wished. Of course, zoning is never mentioned in HB 1017. I thought it relevant to raise what's happened with HB 1025 in the current session and the final adoption of the executive order by the executive, wherein the location of the prison is being reexamined. So I think whatever discretion arguably existed under that HB 1017 is certainly up for reanalysis by the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson.
Thank you.
Mr. Flynn, you can proceed with your argument.
Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. South Dakota must have a prison because the state action at issue in this case was, in selecting the future prison site, was discretionary based on validly delegated legislative authority. The state is immune from suit in this action based on its sovereignty. Absent sovereign immunity, the construction, maintenance, and operation of a prison constitutes an essential governmental function. And this court has held that such an essential function cannot be obstructed by local zoning laws. The circuit court found in favor of appellees on these issues, and we respectfully request that this court affirm that decision. I begin with sovereign immunity, as the state's position is that issue is dispositive. The state is immune from suit absent legislative consent. That consent can either be explicit or it can be implied. This court has found that the legislature implicitly consents to suit where it provides ministerial duties or directives to state actors. The reason that this court has made that distinction between ministerial and discretionary functions is that failure to follow a ministerial directive from the legislature is outside the lawful authority of that state actor. So such actions would not be protected under sovereign immunity. This court considers a ministerial duty to be a governing rule that is so clear that it eliminates the need for judgment or discretion by the acting officer. Essentially, it allows the state agent to determine the how and the when of implementing a rule. A discretionary rule, contrarily, is one that falls outside that narrow scope of ministerial duties. So, as I said, sovereign immunity does not apply to ministerial duties, as the government can be compelled to perform them. This court has found that such a specifically described duty, when it is not followed by the state actor, does not merit the protection of sovereign immunity.
What about Mr. Swanson's argument that HB 1017 just doesn't say anything about it? And so that's really not dispositive of anything. And, you know, he would probably, or maybe has argued in addition to that, HB 1017 comes against the backdrop of the Lincoln County case from the 1970s, where a different case, perhaps, but where this court indicated that an inclination to balance the interest, the relative interest of governmental entities. So maybe the silence means we should apply the balancing of interests.
Your Honor, I would interpret that silence to mean exactly the opposite, frankly. And the reason for that is because this court, or the legislature, is presumed to be aware of this court's decisions. And not only was HB 1017 passed in 2023 with the backdrop of Lincoln County v. Johnson, as the Justice points out, but also with the backdrop of City of Rapid City v. Pennington County, in which this court adopted the common law general rule when it deals with, or when the court was dealing with entities that were not extraterritorial and were not intruding. And the state's opinion is that's the key distinction that analogizes the present situation with Pennington County, or City of Rapid City, and likewise distinguishes it from the Lincoln County case.
There was a reference in that case, though, to a statute, a specific statute, and it seemed the court was certainly looking at that, whether it was looking at both, or that's ultimately where it landed, maybe debatable. But what is your thought about the fact they were referring to a particular statute that addressed the issue there?
Certainly, Judge. Justice, and I appreciate that question, because that leads into what is a very important point in this matter. What truly was the holding of the City of Rapid City and Pennington County case, and how much did this court rely on those statutes, and how much did it rely on the common law general rule? I think it's clear from the decision in the City of Rapid City case that this court intended to adopt that common law general rule, again, in these unique factual circumstances that are very different from Lincoln County. And quickly, Lincoln County, in the Lincoln County v. Johnson case, we had the City of Sioux Falls attempting to construct a sanitary or a sewage facility.
Landfill,
I apologize, outside of the city's outside of the city's jurisdiction, but still within the county. In the City of Rapid City versus Pennington County case, we had the county that was trying to build a jail facility or modify a jail facility within the bounds of the City of Rapid City. And this court recognized that those are very different entities. One, in the Lincoln County case, we had the city venturing outside of its domain or outside of its jurisdiction. We also had it intruding into the jurisdiction of another separate governmental entity. Finally, it's important to note that both of those entities, in both the Lincoln County and the City of Rapid City case, were creatures of statute and were not the state government. But in the City of Rapid City case, Pennington County fully encompassed the City of Rapid City, and so it was not extraterritorial. Likewise, the county was not intruding on another entity because Rapid City was fully encompassed by Pennington County. Now, this point is critical in the analysis of this matter because, in reality, Pennington County had other options because there are parts of Pennington County that exist outside the city limits of the City of Rapid City. However, there is no portion of South Dakota that exists outside one of the respective counties. So to establish county zoning as the gatekeepers of when and where a prison could be built could essentially prevent that prison from being built anywhere. And this was exactly one of the things that the court in the City of Rapid City was concerned about and why it adopted the general rule as a part of the interpretation of the statutes. But I think it's also important to note that the legislature repealed those statutes that were at issue in City of Rapid City, again, imparting on the legislature the knowledge of this court's decisions. We can look at that and say the legislature recognizes that this court adopted the general rule, and so those statutes were no longer necessary because the general rule could be followed. Additionally, those statutes talk about a two-thirds vote being necessary to overcome the other entity's decision. If the intruding entity was denied the ability to build whatever structure or take whatever action they were looking at by the host entity, then that intruding entity could essentially override that via statute. But again, that required a two-thirds vote. So the argument goes that taking those statutes away acknowledged this court's reliance on the general rule.
You know, you mentioned a few moments ago about, in your opening remarks were about an essential government function, and this prison has to be built, and most recently, you know, this idea that the territorial scope of the state, of course, extends, you know, within its exterior boundaries everywhere. But as I read the complaint, the prayer here for relief isn't to stop necessarily the construction of the prison, at least not directly, but it's a due process claim. It's a claim to subject the state to the zoning regulations of Lincoln County, which would require this use, which would be non-conforming in this area, to pursue authority either through a conditional use permit or an application to rezone. So maybe that's indirect, but still, I think the fact remains that this isn't a direct action to stop the state dead in its tracks from building a prison. It's an effort to obtain notice and an opportunity to be heard. Does that matter? Or do you disagree with that?
I certainly don't disagree with the court's characterization, Justice Salter. I think that is 100% accurate. I think the important distinction here, or the relevant issue, is that their desire for notice or that opportunity to be heard is not found in the statutes, and it's not found in this court's case law. Essentially, what this court said in the City of Rapid City case in adopting that general rule was that if we're dealing with an entity that is not extraterritorial and that is not intruding onto another entity, quite simply, the zoning ordinances just do not apply. And so the state had no obligation to follow, you know, to seek a conditional use permit or anything of that nature based on the common law and based on this court's adoption thereof. And the statutes that were referred to, you know, Chapter 11-2, those specifically apply to actions of the county. And here the county, as appellants argued, has not acted other than in their amicus capacity and providing their opinion to the circuit court, but they did not take any action to compel their zoning. So there's nothing here that would grant any jurisdiction under 11.2.
Does the county have a duty to do so, a ministerial duty, to enforce their own ordinances?
Your Honor, in all honesty, I don't know that I have an answer to that question, but I think that that's for another day, as that demand isn't made here. The state certainly has no ministerial duty to comply with those zoning regulations. But that's I believe that that's ultimately an issue for another day because that's not what's presented here.
Can you address the plaintiff's, you know, argument seems to be heavily tied to the fact this is a declaratory judgment action. And we have the cases, they cite the Dan Nelson Automotive Dakota Systems, where an individual can seek declaratory relief. Why isn't that that type of scenario? And maybe it depends on how far down the line of their prayer for relief you go. But if it's just a request for, is the state subject to the county zoning ordinance? I understand your response to the merits of that, but can they seek that?
Certainly. I understood. Justice Devaney, the key there it goes back to the court's question of whether or not a private right of action is present. The state's position is that the appellants in this matter do not qualify for or have not pled appropriately for a declaratory judgment action because they have not met the four jurisdictional requirements that are set forth in the Danforth v. City of Yankton case from this court. Essentially, the court stated that for a declaratory judgment action, the petitioning entity must provide or must plead a justiciable controversy, adverse interests between the parties involved, a legally protected interest on behalf of the person bringing the complaint, and ultimately the controversy must be ripe for consideration by this court. The state's position is, for reasons that the justices have already alluded to, that appellants lack that justiciable controversy and they lack a legally protected interest.
Does it matter? Forgive me, but can I just interject this really quickly?
Absolutely.
Does it matter? Does it matter that 21-24-3 and other provisions in the Declaratory Judgment Act seem to center upon declaring rights under something, a writing, a statute, something, more so than just an abstract, hey, this is how we see the field?
I think that's extremely relevant, Justice Salter, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that continuing that thought, not only are the appellants not asserting a right under a particular writing or document or a statute, but essentially what they're asking for is they're asking the government to do something. They're saying, Department of Corrections, you have to contact Lincoln County and follow through and either seek a conditional use permit or seek a variance. And this court has said that essentially that's not what a declaratory judgment is set out for.
So
and I would ask,
they're not seeking a declaration of their rights as much as you would say they're seeking a declaration of or compelling the state to act or something that would compel the state to act.
You said that much better than I did, Justice Salter, and I appreciate that. And I would direct this court to consider the case of Hostler v. Davison County Drainage Commission. I think that case is relevant because there we had an adjoining landowner who challenged the commission's decision to grant a drainage permit as an abuse of discretion, saying essentially that the commission didn't consider all items that were needed to be considered when it made that decision. What this court found was that rather than asking the court to enforce a right, or specifically, he was not challenging an ordinance or seeking a declaration of his rights or his status or other legal relation. What he was doing was asking the court to void an administrative decision for failure to consider all necessary interests. Similarly, that's what's happening here. The Department of Corrections made an administrative decision to build a prison on this particular site. What appellants challenge is their failure to consider local zoning ordinances. Now, certainly, the state's position is that they have no need or obligation to consider those. But ultimately, a very similar claim was considered by this court to not be appropriate under a declaratory judgment action.
You need to wrap up, Mr. Flynn.
Understood, Your Honor. I would just say that I think that this would be more akin to a mandamus action, because that's seeking to compel the state to perform a particular function or to take an action, as opposed to enforcing some right. There again, just as with the sovereign immunity analysis, the mandamus can only apply to ministerial functions, so that similarly would not lie. I would state in conclusion that, plainly stated, appellants simply do not want this prison in their backyard, and they are attempting to use the county zoning laws to prevent that from happening. However, the state is not subject to those local zoning laws based on the common law general rule and this court's decisions, and they would not be able to perform their essential governmental functions if they were so held to those ordinances. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Swanson, you can proceed with rebuttal.
Justice Salter, I think you were exactly correct in saying that the entire tenor of our complaint is a plea for due process. After 35 years of being a coexisting landlord with everyone else, including the appellants here, the state included, after getting this farm by its cheap, all under first the rural and public use district, and then in 1995, it was amended into the A1 district, where a public owned and managed or operated facility, if I recall, became no longer a permissive use as it was back in the days of the Sioux Falls effort to build a landfill in Lincoln County, the 1977 case. To today, it's a conditional use. Would require a conditional use permit, and that was a decision that the Lincoln County commissioners made when that amended ordinance was adopted in 1995. That'd be about 3 years after the state obtained title to this property by its cheat. To say that their interest in having the right to a hearing when there's going to be such a major, potentially catastrophic change in use and operation of the Widow Haug's former farm, that the due process interests mean nothing to the state, quite frankly, is startling. I can't believe they can so easily trample those interests. I find that incomprehensible. They cannot, other than pointing to this so-called general law, general rule exemption, I find nothing else that really supports it. Council has talked about City of Rapid City versus Pennington County. It's a case I've read rather extensively, because it is the antithesis of what he is suggesting. When that case was decided, City of Rapid City said, "You've made a fundamental error here in the circuit court because you didn't apply the balancing of interest test." Justice Sabers, in his dissent, was almost beside himself talking about the list of horribles because they didn't apply the balancing of interest test. But the majority opinion simply put that to rest by saying the Lincoln County against Johnson rule, balancing of interest, does not apply here because of that fundamental difference in 11-6-21, that override statute, which originally was one statute. It was broken apart into three statutes, and then ultimately can, by the legislature, repealed in 2010 or 11. The fact is, the statutory lay of the land did not allow the court to comprehensively apply the balancing of interest test because it was meaningless. The county had the right to come in and override that determination. In no way did City of Rapid City retreat from the balancing of interest test. It simply decided it was not applicable. In fact, I don't even think the term general rule appears in that decision. They did not seriously, this court did not seriously consider that at all. I want to commend for this court's consideration the case of City of Temple Terrace, which this court used unusually warm language over in the Lincoln County against Johnson case back in 1977. The word, we commend this case to the parties and their counsel. Thought that decision was incredibly insightful. Said the, and if I may quote, the decision of a person administering an outlying function of a state agency, this is at page 578 and continuing to 579, with respect to the site where this function should be performed is not necessarily any better than the decision of the local authorities on the subject of land use. The adoption of the balancing of interest test will compel governmental agencies to make more responsible land use decisions by forcing them to consider the feasibility of other sites for the facility as well as alternative methods of making the proposed site less detrimental to the local zoning scheme. Discussion by council of Pennington County being extraterritorial to Rapid City and how that worked out. When you're going to have a work-release jail, I don't think you want it in some hinterland of the county. I think you want to have it where there are actual jobs where people could be work-released too. And I think that's part and parcel of the reason the county decided to put it in Rapid City and why they decided under that now-repealed statute to go ahead and force the issue.
Mr. Swanson, your time's up if you want to wrap up.
All right. I will wrap up and urge this court to again consider adopting the balancing of interest test to all governmental entities, whether they have direct zoning power or not, and that would include the state and its agencies. Thank you.
Thank you, Council, for your arguments this morning.